I'm wondering how many of you remember a time when you would go away and leave your house unlocked. See some signs of hands, yes. Or went into the store and left the keys in the car. Of course, the car unlocked. I've left keys in the car with the car locked. That's another story. Growing up on a farm in Nebraska, we never locked the house. In fact, I don't even remember if we had a key to the door, the front door. And I remember commenting about this to my family in recent years. We had this huge overhead gas tank, probably 500 gallons of gas it held, with no lock on it. And certainly anyone could have been watching the farm for that opportune time when we left and helped themselves to free gas, and we probably would have never known it. Maybe that happened, who knows? More recently, just within the last year, our neighbor across the street, Carl and Debbie, were telling us about their son, Mike and Alicia, who lived down in Maryland. And one day when they were not at home, both of them were at work, someone broke into their house and stole a number of guns, a laptop computer that had all their financial files and many other things, actually had pictures that they had taken of all their things, kind of to have an inventory of their house. Unfortunately, it was in the computer, which was gone. Stole a file, or a filing cabinet, actually a security box that had in social security cards, passports, birth certificates, jewelry. It was a major trauma, and Mike and Alicia spent thousands of dollars getting new locks, an elaborate security system, buying a new safe that Mike bolted to the floor of the basement, and of course all the identity protection that they felt like they needed, for now their personal information was out there to who knows where. Mike's parents, our neighbors across the street, went from boasting about never locking their house there in South Perkasie to themselves buying and installing a security system, and of course telling us the number so that we know it if they're ever away and we need to get in their house. Last fall in November, Mary and I spent a couple of weeks in Israel, and we met Rabbi Hanan Schlesinger in an Israeli settlement in his home. He invited our group of 15 into his home. And I remember entering the compound in which he lived there in a settlement called Gush Etzion. There are high walls around the settlement, of course, keeping enemies out, and a guard stationed there at the gate, allowing us entrance to the settlement. Rabbi Hanan told us a story about his wife who wanted to buy a few plants, and her husband says, "Why don't you just go to the Palestinian greenhouse just outside the gate and buy your plants there this time?" And she reluctantly agreed to do that, but came back traumatized and said, "What's wrong? What happened?" Nothing really happened, but she vowed to never go back there again because she was in the presence, close presence, of several Palestinian men. Even though their fear was unfounded, the stories of stabbing and violence, the hands of angry Palestinians, kept her and Rabbi Hanan and all of their friends walled off from ever having contact with their Palestinian neighbors who lived just a mile down the road. Meanwhile, we heard stories of so many Palestinians who described their reality as being in an open-air prison due to the presence of Israeli security and some 80 checkpoints around the country. And because of that experience that Rabbi Hanan had with his wife and others, he began to realize here fear is keeping him, his wife, his friends bound up in their own little settlement prisons. And he worked hard to begin to break down the walls of suspicion and fear by face-to-face meetings with Palestinians, bringing people together for understanding and working at peacemaking, breathing peace rather than violence, one person at a time. Small signs of hope in a troubled land. Closer to home again, in our country, fear sells. We know that. And politicians know that. More gated communities, higher walls, security systems, proposed and real walls at our southern border. But in all truth, these measures do little to actually make us less fearful, to actually make us more secure. Not really. And locks come in all sizes and shapes, and not just from the hardware store or in the form of security systems. Because it's quite natural, if anyone's experienced any trauma, to lock ourselves away, literally or figuratively. You've seen it and perhaps have been the one locking yourself away, the breakup of a relationship, a significant loss, and rather than feeling that pain again in risking again of more rejection, more pain, close the door and click the lock of your heart. Our daughter, Megan, and her boyfriend David, teaches in an inner city school in Brooklyn, New York. He teaches fifth grade there, and he sees children already at that age who have failed so many times that it seems that they have slammed the door of their minds and hearts shut and locked their minds already in fifth grade. And David's challenge is to find something, some way to pique their curiosity enough that those kids who've already faced so much rejection and pain in their lives to unlock their minds, to be able to again learn and appreciate the wonder of learning. Now, why all this talk about closed and locked doors? Because it's right there in our gospel text this morning. Here on the second Sunday of Easter, John tells us that a group of people who are not just any group of people, but are his disciples, are cowered behind closed doors, locked doors. And I noticed that as Leona read that this morning, that in the translation she was reading, twice it mentions locked doors. In NRSV, the first time it specifically mentions locked door, but then some verses later when Jesus appears to Thomas, in NRSV it just says shut door, but in her version it said locked door again. So there's obviously a reason here where John's gospel is picking up on this image not only of a closed door, but a locked door. Well, it's night in Jerusalem, and night times in any city around the world tend to be more dangerous. But the city of Jerusalem, after that weekend of terrible violence, worked against Jesus. His disciples have lots of reasons to be fearful. But I wonder if they were not also fearful of the potential ridicule of their friends and families. Here were the disciples of Jesus, those who had come forward to follow Jesus, who had modeled him, tried to model Jesus with their lives, who believed that Jesus would be the one to redeem Israel. These few people had given their lives to a cause. And now it seemed that cause is gone. And the text says
the doors were locked for fear of the Jews. They were Jews. The disciples were Jews. So who were these other Jews that they were so fearful of? And we're not sure exactly who they were, but I wonder if they weren't these friends or relatives even who were scornfully mocking them, saying, "Oh, some Messiah. You follow this guy who's now dead. Where is your Savior and Lord now?" And I wouldn't blame them for locking their doors against their mockers. A few weeks ago, I was late afternoon. I think I was home changing to prepare to go running when I happened to look out the window and saw two young men walking down the street toward our house. They rang the doorbell. I didn't go to the door, I confess. Not that I was fearful, but that I was pretty sure and assumed that they were Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, the starched white shirts and the narrow black tie, khakis. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, but I didn't find out. But then later, as I was on my run, I thought, I wonder how discouraging it must be for these young men these days to go from door to door, ring doorbells, no one comes to the door, or someone comes to the door and finds out and slams the door in their face. Or maybe they feel like they're mocked by angry faces. I would think if I were them, I'd want to just go home and close my door and lock it and never try that again. It was no small matter that those who had closed the door and locked the locks were Jesus' own disciples. And the irony of this story seems to be that while they're fearful of the Jews, whether those are Jewish soldiers and people of the Roman system, they're not the ones really trying to get to Jesus. They're trying to get to the disciples. And even though the disciples might have been fearful of ridicule, we're not told that that actually happened. So it's not the enemies or even the friends who are trying to get in, but rather it is Jesus who wants to come to them. But then I wondered if maybe this Jew that they were, or the Jews that they were afraid of, is none other than Jesus himself. After all, if they believed that he was now alive again, what was he going to say to them? They had deserted him. Might he be angry at them, even vengeful? If these women were right and Jesus was alive, it likely stirred some fear in their hearts, because the Lord that they loved had also been the Lord that they betrayed. Now what? What if the testimony of the women were true? They may have reason to be afraid. And Christ may have come to them, hypothetically, in their minds at least, have come to them and say, "So, now where were you people? You know, I had a pretty good view up there on the cross, and I saw the soldiers out there, and I saw my mother Mary out there, but where were you? What was all this business about, 'Oh, we will never leave you'?" But no, Jesus It's coming to them not to condemn them, but to offer them peace, to replace their fear. He came to them not to give them a tongue lashing, but to forgive them and to empower them as he breathed his spirit upon them. And he says simply, peace. Christ thus implicitly forgives his disciples for their failure to be faithful. And it seems the good news of this second Sunday of Easter is simply that our securely locked doors of our homes, our house, our hearts even, are not a problem for Jesus. Just as death could not hold him in the tomb, so our various locks cannot keep him from getting to us. He gets through the locked doors. He's there, appears to them. The locked doors seem not to be a problem anymore. And he shows his wounds and the scars to them, and he says to those who may have been fearful of the possibility of his retribution against them, peace be with you. The risen Christ will not be locked by death in a tomb, nor will he be locked away from his people, the disciples. Good news, Christ will not be locked away from his people then or now. And so we are given this story from Acts chapter 5, where these disciples, these followers of Jesus, once so fearful, are now confronting those who are accusing them and saying, we can't help but speak and act of the things that we've seen and heard. Speaking against the empire of the systems of domination, whether they be political or religious. Speaking to the power of God to bring life and vitality and new community to a people. And I wonder, maybe, if there are times, too, when if we really admit it, we're just a little bit afraid of Christ. We maybe unintentionally lock Christ out when we rush through our day unaware of the presence of the Spirit with us. We may lock Christ out when we turn our back on the least of these, Christ's brothers and sisters and our own. Friday night, Mary and I went to Philadelphia and met David and Megan there, and we ate at an Ethiopian restaurant in West Philly. Wonderful food. And the very next day, I was reading online a story about one of the worst droughts Ethiopia has ever faced, and how MCC is working in ways to relieve the hunger there. You say, what is our response when we know of needs of the least of these, our brothers and sisters around the world? Do we lock Christ out when we give up on his people, the church? We might not know we're locking Christ out when we keep our faith tucked neatly away within ourselves, when our religion becomes something we practice only in the safe confines of the church rather than out in the marketplace or in the classroom or the gym. When we lock Christ out, when we push off to another time the hard words of Jesus to love our enemies and to forgive those who have sinned against us. But again, the good news this morning on the second Sunday of Easter is that Jesus comes to us with our locked doors, whatever those locked doors are for us, in our church, in our community, and he breathes on us too. He pronounces peace and forgiveness to whatever is keeping us awake at night, to all the ways we hold on to our fear, even when it may make us ill, even when it keeps us awake at night, even when it strains our relationships, or even when it isolates us from our neighbors near and far. And as politicians breathe on us the messages of fear, let us resist and keep feeling the breath of Christ offering us peace and forgiveness, so that we might be ambassadors for peace in our homes, in our church, in our community, and in our world. We are in Easter season, the season of great good news, and this text ends not with a scolding, not with a tongue lashing, not with even a warning of how we need to open the doors of our hearts and let Christ into our lives. No, this text simply ends with a promise that the risen Christ is not stopped by closed doors or deadbolts or security systems. And Christ promises that he will not be deterred by our locks that you and I have put on our doors, literally or figuratively. Our God is wonderfully resourceful, persistent, and imaginative, and continues to find ways to come to us, so that even in grief, in loss, in fear, the first thing he does is come to us and breathes on us and offers us peace. And I believe that even now, even in this sermon, even right here in this place, here at PMC, and as you go forward into this day, into this week, Christ continues to come to you and to us. And remember, he's not coming to judge you. He's not coming to scold you. He's not even asking you to open the gates and the doors of your heart. But he's simply coming to offer you peace, to breathe on you his spirit. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. His love is stronger. His love is stronger than your fear. Don't be afraid, as he has promised to be always near. Don't be afraid. His love is stronger. My love is stronger than your fear. Don't be afraid. My love is stronger.